Okay, so on the exams, the maximum possible was 147. That was achieved by two people. Actually, I was very happy with the grades, although as I put the disclaimer this morning, no, I'm not always happy with the grades unless everybody gets 147, but then I'm just disappointed because I obviously made too easy an exam. So there is no pleasing me, ultimately. But basically the grading is such that when I make the exam out of 147 points, I'm certainly happy with grades above 90. That's the end concept, because I know it's a long exam, and that's the concept there. So the mean was 120. The 50th percentile was 126. How many of you are new to the University of Washington? So unless if you're aware that with how we grade is we grade on a 4.0, 3.9, 3.8, 3.7, and so on scale. Certainly historically, when I teach this class, usually the median grade is somewhere around a 3.6 or so, that these grades go. That's roughly comparable to how you do on the exam as well. So that's basically what it would be. There's nobody who got a grade that I think is in trouble. So you can take that as you would. I like it, though, if everybody tries to figure out exactly how they lost points, which generally there are no words written on there because that would take forever. You would still not have your exam back 2 weeks from now. But there is a key that will be posted. And on Monday, I am going to do a quiz thing where basically I'll be going over some of this aspect for the exam of some points that I want to comment on. So some of it is going beyond what the exam truly did. But so you might look at the key, and on Monday it'll be another quiz just like the one we did before, where it's just going through and asking some questions and then discussing the answers to them. It is the extremely wise student who adds up their own score. Okay, so I've already been proven wrong twice so far this morning. If you add up the points on your test and they don't add up to what's on the front of the page, and they add up to a higher number that's on the front of the page, please tell me. I will fix it. If they add up to a number less than what's on the front of the page, if you just want to point out to me that I don't know how to add, you can come tell me that, but it won't change your grade in my reporting. So the idea is that I only correct mistakes that were against you. I don't correct mistakes in your favor. I am different from the bank and the federal government in that regard. if it's there, if there's some question that we forgot to grade or forgot to write down the score in or something like that, also tell us. If there's something that we graded wrong, you can tell me. What always enters into some of this is there's consistency. So sometimes I graded everybody's that way. You can argue a particular point with me as to whether it should have counted that many points or not. But if that's the way that I graded everybody's paper, it's going to stay. But I will remark that I graded these things largely like an essay test. So for some of you, didn't quite answer question, B the way I would have wanted it. But by the time I got down to D, you had indicated that you knew what it was, and so I went back and changed that. As I said in the instructions, however, I usually don't go back when you're at a different part and then you make it clear that you just got lucky on part B, and that you then give an answer on part D that shows that you didn't have it better. But when it's in your favor, I usually do go back. It's that concept there. I will say that, there are a number of instances where people answered that the first sentence was right on. Just stopped then.
So
there are times that you lost points because you went on to say something that wasn't true. And so the way that I communicate with you that you went on to say something that wasn't true is I take off points. You know, so that's the idea. So if there's any question in your mind that as you read the key and said, but I said that, look to see what else you said. But I am very happy to discuss individual exams with you, because while I'm happy with how these work, I'd be even happier if you got everything right on the final. So looking ahead to the final, just so you know, the finals tend to be about as long as the midterm. So that it'll be about the same length, but have 2 hours to take it in. So that changes a lot. And if you'd like to know what you're going to write on the course evaluations about the way I do midterms, I can give you a multiple choice thing. So I've heard it before. Questions? So again, I'll have the key posted. I'll have the distribution of grades on there. But it's roughly like previous years. Okay, I will be putting out a homework today sometime over the weekend. You will be finding out what your data set for your project will be. And then sometime early next week, you'll find out who'll be in your group. I'm doing this for a reason. I want everybody. So there's going, as I assign you your group, I'm going to be asking you to describe how you're going to analyze the data. And I'm going to be asking you how you're going to analyze the data without looking at the data. So one of the data sets, unfortunately, is available, but I'm going to ask that you not go in and start analyzing it and deciding that, because that's not the point. The point is to see, is to decide how you would analyze this data before you look at it. That's the way you do things in science, right? You design your experiment and then you do it. You don't do a whole bunch of stuff and then afterwards say, I wonder what question I was answering. So I want everybody to do that. And then when you get in groups, you're not really held to what you said you were going to do in your data analysis. But I do want you to have thought about it along those lines, how you would plan it. The data sets that you're getting in both cases are complicated. But that's the reason, is that hiding inside every complicated data set is a simple question. Okay? And so that you will not have to answer every question that's in the documentation. I will make that clear as I assign you the data set. And in fact, the purpose of this is as much that in statistics as in medicine, first do no harm. Do an analysis that you know how to do, you can do it correctly, and that you'll understand it at the end. And that gets you a lot further than doing something fancy. And so that is the point of this project. So questions on the project? If I wasn't vague enough, you can ask a question. I'll be even vaguer. Okay, so again, there will be, I guess there will be 26 different groups of four people mixed and matched according to my whims. Okay. So we're talking about how we can use the one sample test to really answer any question that's important. And it's very rare that a one-sample test is important unless your one sample is already taking into account contrasts. Contrast within pairs, contrast within matched groups, contrast within the same individual. So far we had talked about what do you do when you have independent measurements, but now we're going to take several measurements on each subject, and then we combine them. Most often, we just take the difference between matched data. Difference between you taking aspirin, you taking Tylenol, difference between you taking aspirin, your identical twin taking Tylenol, difference between you taking aspirin, another family member doing it, or just somebody from your same hospital, or things like that where we have data that we think are matched in some way. And by taking the difference, you know, it's the problem of people sitting in their office and facing the well-known problem of your garbage can catching on fire. And the engineer, when they're sitting there and their garbage can is on the floor and catches on fire, gets a bucket of water and pours it on that garbage can and puts it out. The mathematician does exactly the same. Just on fire. But then the next day when they come in their office and their garbage can is sitting on their desk and it catches on fire, the engineer gets some water and pours it on the garbage can and puts it out. But the mathematician reduces it to a problem that's already been solved and first moves the garbage can to the floor and then uses that same solution technique. Well, this is the concept. The first thing we do is that I know how to handle independent measurements, but if I've got several measurements on each subject, then the first thing to do is collapse them into a measurement on each individual, and now they're independent and I know what to do. And so there's an awful lot of statistics we do this way. So on the paired differences, I might have a measurement W and a measurement X, each made on the ith subject, and I want to compare those. And if I want to compare them based on the means, I can talk about this several different ways. I can talk about this as the mean difference, or I can talk about this as the difference in the means. And that works with means. So they're estimating the same thing. The difference of means is the same as the mean difference. So for the ith subject, if I imagined that the W had mean gamma and variance omega squared, and then the X had mean theta and variance tau squared, and the correlation between the two measurements was rho. Well, the really nice thing about all of this is all those new Greek letters I'm just going to get rid of and say, well, but my difference, DI, which is WI minus YI, that difference has mean mu and variance sigma squared. And sure enough, mu is equal to gamma minus theta, and sigma squared is equal to omega squared plus tau squared minus 2 rho omega tau. But all of this fancy use of Greek fonts is unnecessary because we're just going to do inference about mu and sigma squared. We're going to estimate sigma squared, we're going to estimate mu, and we're not going to really worry about estimating those other quantities. When we do inference on paired differences, the scientific and statistical questions relate to that distribution, not to the distribution of each separately. So we examine you, just the mean of differences, using one sample inference about the means. So we just take the sample mean of those differences, D bar, and we find the sample variance of those differences, DI minus D bar squared. We take the average value of that. And our inference has the point estimate, which is the sample mean of the differences. Our confidence interval looks exactly the same way. It's just D bar plus or minus our standard error, SD, over the square root of n, times our critical value. And we do p-values in the exact same way. So there's really nothing to this. Nothing to this. You'd all have done this by yourself, having learned the independent test without having thought about it. In Stata, if you have those two different variables, you would just say t-test variable 1 equals variable 2. And that is the way you signify that you want to take those comparisons. This requires data in the so-called wide format. Okay, so this requires that every row have both the first measurement and the second measurement on each row. That if you had it in the long format where you had multiple rows for each group and that you had something that told you what time was or something like that, then you'd have to reshape. So in the SEP data set, where we have these different peaks that we're measuring the time from something that when you stimulate a nerve on your ankle and how long it gets up to the to your brain. Well, we had measurements made on both the right side and the left side on each individual. And we could say, you know, is the average on the right equal to the average on the left? A nonsensical question, because I can't imagine why somebody thinks it would be different on the right and left, while I could imagine somebody might think it would be different on your dominant side and your non-dominant side. So that would be really a better question to use, if only I knew which was the dominant side on all of these patients. But we're just going to compare the right and left. Now, some of you might think this is a very reasonable question, because wouldn't you at first like to be sure that there isn't a systematic difference between the two sides? You know, maybe there was something about the way the table was set up, and maybe you do it differently. But it takes an infinite sample size to prove equivalence. So just the fact that we aren't going to get a statistically significant difference here doesn't prove that there's no problem. But we do this PT test. And as with the, as before, it gives us the mean, the standard error, standard deviation, and the 95% confidence interval. But because we have two variables, it gives us that for each variable. And then it gives us the point estimate and the standard error and the confidence interval for the difference. Okay, so we can look at this, and it says that on the right side, it averaged 35.007, left side, 35.178. Give confidence intervals for both sides. That's not what we care as much about. We care about the difference of negative 0.172. Standard error is 0.130, and our confidence interval from negative 0.427 to 0.085. That confidence interval, because that is the number we care about, our null hypothesis is zero. That's the logical null hypothesis, to say that the difference is zero, is giving us the inference that we want. And then down at the bottom, we have our statistical tests. Probably you're interested in the two-sided test here. We would be bothered if the right side was larger than the left side, or if the left side was larger than the right side, either one. So our p-value is 0.1888. So we estimate an average delay of 35.007 milliseconds on the right, 35.178 milliseconds on the left. We estimate a difference in the average delay of 0.172 milliseconds. Our interpretation of our confidence interval. When might you expect to get a data set with a difference of 0.172? And the answer is, the true difference were between 0.427 milliseconds higher on the left, or the true difference were 0.085 higher on the right, or anything in between, then we might expect to see a sample in which the sample mean was 0.172 milliseconds. Based on the two-sided p-value, we do not have evidence to suggest that we can prove that the means are different. But there's a big difference between not being able to prove they're different and proving that they are not different. English. Where you place the word not matters an awful lot. Why?
In the second last bullet there, is there any quantitative statement that we can make about that expectation?
Well, which is the second to the last bullet?
0.95% confidence interval, such difference is not unexpected.
Yeah, so this definition of what's expected, that's where 95% comes in. If you talk about, well, what do I expect? I expect to see things that are in the central 95% of their distribution. So that's where the term 95% comes in, is just my definition of what I consider a typical result and what I consider atypical results. And then that is the quantification. But notice that when I'm giving these values, I am speaking of the confidence interval in the parameter space. So those two numbers mean to me is, what if the truth were 0.427? What if the truth were 0.085? And then I'm talking about the chance of observing 0.172 in those cases. And because those are the boundaries, and because the central 95% puts 2.5% on each side, we know that if the truth were 0.427, higher on the left, that there's only a 2.5% chance that we would observe a sample mean that was 0.172 or lower. And if the truth were 0.085 higher on the right, there's only a 0.025 chance that we would observe 0.172 or higher. And then all points in between, that probability is higher than 0.025. Somebody ask a question over here? Yes. So in this particular case, we had 250 cases in our data set. Okay. We collapsed everything down to one measurement on 250 subjects. I calculated one parameter, the sample mean, when I then went to compute the sample variance. So that gives my degrees of freedom of n minus 1. Generally, the computer will do this appropriately for me. But every now and again, when somebody does something and I say, you know, then you go, well, were you using the 2-degree of freedom test or the 5-degree of freedom test? And that will be, you know, when we're doing different tests. But generally, the computer will just do everything and you can safely ignore it. But every now and again, we'll come back to it. Other questions? So this is really just a one sample test because we took two measurements and collapsed them into a single measurement on each subject. There's lots of times we do this. And again, looking ahead to what your projects will be, you're going to have lots and lots of measurements on each individual. And it's not really the topic of this course to handle that any other way other than to collapse it down to a single measurement. And so that's what you're going to be doing on these projects, is you're going to be thinking through how you take all of these individuals and find one measurement that captures what you want on those individuals. Maybe many times, but we'll talk about that. Now, why did I have to take the difference? Couldn't I have taken the ratios? And the answer is that yes, but if we do this, we have to recognize that the ratios are less stable if denominators are near zero, so they'll behave badly if you've got measurements near zero. Now, we don't have any measurements near zero, so it's probably not too bad in this case. The other thing you need to know is if your true interest was the ratio of means rather than the mean of ratios, if you really wanted to say, you know what, I really wanted to see what a population of smokers, what their mean would be, and a population of non-smokers, what their mean would be. But just for convenience, I decided to have the same people be both my smokers and non-smokers by waiting a suitable number of years after they stopped smoking. And the trouble is, when I said that it didn't matter with the difference of means because the mean difference is the same as the difference of the means, it's not true with ratios. The ratio of the means is not the same thing as the mean ratio. So we can prove that quite simply. If I have paired observations, I made 4 and 2 on one subject, 8 and 1 on another, 12 and 3 on another, 16 and 5 on another, 20 and 4 on another. If the first observation is y, the average y value, 60 divided by 5, is 12. The average x value, 15 divided by 5, is 3. The ratio of the means, 12 divided by 3, is 4. But if instead I made each ratio, then my numbers are 2, 8, 4, 3.2, and 5, and the average of those 5 ratios is 4.44. Just depends upon what you want. One of the problems that you sometimes face is that you would like transitivity. You would like to know that, for instance, if treatment A is better than treatment B and treatment B is better than treatment C, that you'd like to know that treatment A must be better than treatment C. And when you get into doing these things of means of ratios and stuff, there's no guarantee that you did that. Whereas if you did the ratio of means, that would be transitive. So there are little technicalities sometimes that you do it. I generally prefer to make certain that I am estimating what I want for the population. So if what I want is I want to know what is the average ratio in the population, then I'm happy. But if I was trying to compare different populations, the population of people who take ibuprofen, the population of people who take aspirin, the population of people who take Tylenol, if I wanted to estimate that and get that transitivity, I'd better be doing the ratio of means, not the mean ratio. So we don't do it. But I've already spoken to the fact that statisticians are not really very good at multiplication and dividing. We like to do differences. And so most times when we want ratios, we'll transform things to the logarithmic scale and do differences. But then we're not doing the ratio of means. We're doing the ratio of geometric means. Stata, to do inference for ratios, we'd have to create the ratios ourselves. So I generated a variable N35 ratio, and then I do a t-test that N35 ratio is equal to 1. So the one sample t-test. And this inference will be asymptotically correct. In large samples, it will behave perfectly well. But you just will not be able to have taken the two means and then say that you're getting that same value. It's not necessarily true. I'll also note that you can get different results depending upon whether you do N35R over N35L or N35L over N35R. So they can behave differently. Okay, we'll stop here before we get into how we do binomial proportions. Thank you.